pay the dues, right?
Yeah. I guess that's the best way of saying it, is just pay your dues, because, and I keep bringing this up, but like, we're seeing the Browns now finally get to the point where it's just like, the Browns fan base is finally like, oh my gosh, what is going on here? You know, so you feel good.
Browns
for
under.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, and you could, and that is totally within the realm because they're the Browns. But the fact of the matter is that the hope is so ridiculously high for that team, you know, and that's good for the fan base. You feel good for them. You want them to, you want to see them do that. But I don't know. I guess it's just hard because Vegas hasn't had to struggle at all whatsoever. It's just been handed them on a golden plate, no pun intended.
VGK fans, Nick Nice is on the Sharks tomorrow night. That's what he just said right there. So
yeah, it is what it is.
Tom, the other series tomorrow, game 3 in St. Louis. So this, and maybe you can comment on this, supposedly this is the biggest liability right now in the sports books is St. Louis Blues futures. They were basically out of the playoffs, went on this amazing run. They get in, and now they're up 2-0 over a team in Winnipeg that many thought could come out of the West as the representative in the finals.
You know, what's funny, though, is that they were favored in the series, Tim. They were a -125 favorite in the series against Winnipeg, which was shocking. That's how many people are on the Blues. Yeah, you're right. It's a huge liability on a futures play for that. And then people just kept loading up on them. The hotter they became, more people loaded up on them. I give you credit. We barely talk about hockey. And you mentioned a couple of weeks ago to keep an eye on St. Louis, and then they just went absolutely crazy. I gave you credit on my show, my New York show here. During the week, I said, yeah, Tim, you kind of opened my eyes to them, and I've been following them. I made a couple of bucks off of them as well. Look, St. Louis is a good team. I didn't believe that they had enough to get by Winnipeg, but I wasn't going to bet on it.
It's amazing what two guys who don't know anything about hockey can come up with sometimes, huh?
Yeah, it's pretty fun. Funny to think, TomBartonSports.com, I didn't bet hockey for 5 years to my clients, because I was only hitting about 52% for a couple of years there, so I decided to take it off. I went back into it this year, and according to Capper Monitor and CapperTech.com, I had the best regular season winning percentage in the country. I only bet about 30 games, I think 29 games all year. But that'll show you. Yeah, we might know something about hockey.
Hour one in the books here on a Saturday night. When we come back, let's wrap up the NCAA basketball season as some coaching hires were made. No, not TJ Otzelberger. Some other coaching decisions or hires were made. We'll talk about that with Tom. And then a little Major League Baseball also in hour number two. It's Heatwave Sports right here on Fox Sports Radio.
I can't believe you asked that. I really can't believe it. Let me see here. Kentucky Wildcats, number 4 in the country. I'm hearing 4 first-round draft choices. And you're asking me how that got away from me?
They're the big blow. You ought to know that. I'm not mad at you.
Now back to Heatwave Sports. Here's Tim Unglesby and Tom Barton.
Hour 2, Saturday night, Heatwave Sports. Reminder, no show tomorrow night, VGK, game 3. Will dominate the Fox Sports airwaves. Tom, the Big Blue is not looking for a new head coach there to take over Kentucky, but there were some coaching changes here as the season has ended. Virginia, the national champions. Let's start with the one closest to Las Vegas area, and I think you're going to like my take on this one, but I'd love to get yours from an outsider's perspective. So Eric Musselman goes to Arkansas. He goes to the SEC. The replacement now in Reno at Nevada, Steve Alford.
You know, I think it's okay. I think it's fine. I saw a lot of reaction both ways about this. I don't know. Here's the problem. And I'm going to say something that will get all Vegas fans all happy. Okay? But it's just reality. You have to look at what the program is, not what you want it to be. And not what it even is right now. You have to look at just who they are. Nevada was preseason ranked number 4. Nevada had hopes of a national championship. But who the hell is Nevada, right? I mean, come on. If you take out the last year and a half, who the hell is Nevada? If I would have told you 5 years ago, you know, when they hired Musselman, we're going to give you Steve Alford, you'd be very happy. That's a great deal. I know Alford isn't the best, but Nevada isn't either. Nevada is a lower-tiered mid-major at this point. Sorry, guys, that's what they are. The Mountain West is a lower conference. It's a lower mid-major. It's not one of the premier mid-majors. And they are a lower team in the mid-majors. Now, they've had good years, and a lot of that has to do with Musselman and recruiting. Nevada might be, you know, on the ascension if Alfred could keep it going. But I think this is a pretty legit coach for where they are. You can't look at this and think that, and this is the point. I don't listen to Reno Radio, okay? So I don't know where their mindset is. I know that Steve Alford coming to UNLV would have been looked at as a negative because the name is Patino and the ridiculousness was thrown out there. I don't know who Reno was thinking maybe they would be able to get, but this is about who I thought they'd be able to get. So to me, it's a good hire. It's a good fit for him. It's a good fit for them. I think he's about right for that team, and I think they'll have some success with him.
A friend of ours said it best, I think, and I actually agreed with something that he said, which it's hard to do sometimes, but he said for as late as it was, this was an absolutely spectacular hire for the University of Nevada to get Steve Alford as your head coach when Musselman left. I mean, it was kind of slim pickings.
Because so many guys were chosen already. Yeah, that's right. A great point. Yeah,
absolutely great hire. And this may upset UNLV fans, but I'm not afraid of doing that, Tom. I've done it over the years just because I have an opinion and it's not what they think. When the names were being thrown around, and this was after we tossed Patino out and Thad Mata would throw those out. So when the names were left around...
They were never coming here. Yeah, right. They were never coming. Right.
But the strongest, at that point, who were we talking about? This was during the Mike Miller BS, all that going on. And Steve Alford's name kind of popped up, but people just blew it off. I so privately, Tom, wanted Steve Alford to take the job here. And people are like, why would you want that? He's terrible. I go, terrible at what? Look at his record as a head coach over his lifetime. He's a 67% winner. He took New Mexico. Same conference, right, Tom? Same conference. To the tournament three times. UCLA, 3-16s and a Final Four in his 5 years. Wrongfully fired this year. Terrible decision by UCLA. And he knows how to recruit. And you can say all you want about X's and O's. It doesn't matter to me. Guy won 28 games his first year at UCLA. Went to the Final Four 2 years ago and gets fired the next year. I so wanted Steve Alford to be the coach here. And that's not even... I don't have an opinion on TJ Altsenberg. I haven't seen what he can do yet, right? But for people out here that are Rebel fans and drink the Kool-Aid of whatever the Rebels do, if they would have hired Pee Wee Herman, you would have all of a sudden had a run of Twitter posts about how it was such a great decision. Steve Alford was the guy to be the coach here, and they screwed it up. That's my opinion.
I'll tell you this. If I'm grading the coaching hires right now, I told you, I'm giving UNLV is a C+. That could potentially be a solid B, even a B+. This could be an F. Mm-hmm. Nevada, I'm giving Steve Alford a solid B. That could be an A. And at worst, I think, is a C. So, to me, they made the better hire for their situation. They made the better hire. I'm not even comparing coach against coach. I'm talking about timing. I'm talking about situational. You know, the fanfare coming in, the money that will be paid. Put it all together. There's a higher upside with Steve Alford. I think that when you look at who made the better hire, not the better coach, who's the better hire, I think there's no question that Steve Alford is the better hire.
And I think if you could get a true answer out of Steve Alford and said, hey, look, if UNLV would have offered you the job, would you have taken it? I think he would have said yes. I think he would rather coach in Las Vegas than north, you know, up north in Reno, where there's nothing.
But I think you know what, though, Tim? But Tim, listen to me. I'm coming from this from a different angle. I don't want the UNLV job. I'm sorry, I don't. Listen, you guys, this is going to really, you know, get under people's skin at UNLV. But if you're a guy like Steve Alford, you've now got to rebuild your resume because of what happened at UCLA. You said unfairly fired. I agree. But that doesn't mean he doesn't have to re-fire up that resume. He's got to re-establish himself. So to re-establish himself, he's got to go to a smaller school, a lesser conference, and build himself back up. Where do you want the ability to do that? At a place like Nevada that has low expectations, they just got burned by Musselman. They're in a position where they have some good guys coming back. It's quiet up there. The media is going to kind of fall in love with him if he wins, because now they're the anti-Musselman situation up there. That's all good. You come into UNLV, they hired about 500 coaches that left, didn't coach here. You know, the Cronin situation, how many problems that was. They're on their second AD in, 4 years? Mm-hmm. They're a disaster. They can't sell out the building. The Las Vegas Raiders will be here. You're going to compete with money and ticket money against Coach Sanchez and what they're doing there. You know that if you don't have a football team, you don't have a basketball team. You know, listen, that's how people correlate things, right? You have the Raiders are coming here. That's going to be a problem. You have the hockey team doing really well. That's going to be a problem. You're competing with major pro sports. You're competing with the casinos. You have talk radio. How many? You have people bashing. They hated Menzies. Now they didn't like Dave Rice. Now they didn't like it. It's a mess. Why would you come here if you're Steve Alford and try to rebuild yourself with all of the outside noise and all of the outside mess? Go up to quiet little Reno, right? Go up to Reno, do well, win your 20, 23 games or so, get into the first round of the tournament, do that for 2 or 3 years, and you'll be looking for another job at a big school in 3 or 4 years. You come to UNLV, there's a lot of outside noise. There's a lot of problems. There's a lot of issues.
Yeah, I think it would be more ego that I can go in there and I can change it. I think that's how I would approach it more.
He doesn't want to change it. He wants to just get out of here. He doesn't want to go up to Nevada and win with Nevada. I mean, yeah, obviously, to win to an extent. But he's not saying, I'm digging my heels in for 10 years and going to move this organization around. He's saying, let me build my resume and give me a big job.
I did see how Reno was smart enough to build in some clauses in that contract that the university's going to make a little money if there's a buyout, though. That's for sure. Not like UNLV messed up with Menzies, with Chris Beard the first time. I did see they were smart enough to do that.
If Alford wins, he's not there 5 years, then.
I agree. He probably wouldn't be there 3 years.
No, right. Not at all.
And I get it. This is an indictment of UNLV. Obviously, as we move into the next coaching change here, Steve Alford was hated in 87, Tom, when he put the Rebels out of the Final Four. He was hated when he was at New Mexico because they consistently beat the Rebels and couldn't get through them. But it's all about Las Vegas and their fans. It's just ridiculous. So here's another indictment on you. You guys can make fun of Mick Cronin all you want. Never wanted to come here, Tom. UCLA is a way bigger job than UNLV will ever be. It didn't take long for Mick Cronin to say, I'm going out west.
Yeah, and the funny thing about that is I think it's a terrible fit. If you UNLV fans that don't like Mick Cronin and you want him to fail, I think he got a good situation. I just think it's a bad fit, a bad place for him. He's not a bad coach. I'm not saying he's a bad coach. Listen, you got to be a certain somebody to walk into UCLA and to be able to recruit there, to be able to win there, to be able to deal with the history, the legacy, what they expected. You have to be a certain person. Mick Cronin is not that guy. I'm sorry, he's just not. I think it's a terrible hire and a terrible fit, Tim. Not because of Mick Cronin is not a good coach. It's because it's just a bad fit.
Yeah, I don't know what the fan base is going to think here. If you know what Mick Cronin's style of basketball is, that's not what UCLA is used to seeing, Tom. They want to see up and down scoring. That's not Mick Cronin basketball unless he plans on changing his coaching style.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You know, the guy that I thought all along, and I know UNLV fans will rip on me, the guy I thought all along that UNLV should have circled and really focused on and just giving him kind of one of those ridiculous contracts with Bobby Hurley. Mm-hmm. Bobby Hurley's a guy. He's winning at Arizona State. I know he's got his job, his eye on the Duke job. We know that. But it's a wait-in-line situation. Listen, if Coach K retires, and what I'm hearing is that, you know, he's not going to last 3 years. I don't know if I believe that. I know, you know, people close to the organization that think that he's got about 3 years left. Who is he going to go with next? Dawkins is probably the number one guy there. We've heard Coach K actually mention Tommy Amaker might be the number two guy, and Hurley might be number three. So Hurley might be kind of using this as a stepping stone if he could get the Duke job. But Hurley's also a guy that has made mention here and there that he wanted to make a program his own. And I heard an interview where he said, you know, I learned from Coach K, who took Duke from where they were and made them into this. I'd love to do that with a school. Now, Arizona State, the St. John's job opened up here. The first immediate name everybody talked about was Hurley, and what did Arizona State do? It just extended Bobby Hurley. I think UNLV could have gotten into that conversation at least. Would they have stolen him away? Maybe not. But I think they could have gotten into that conversation.
Well, you know how it was handled, Tom, is the coaching search was handled poorly once again, and what if this, what if that? It's here we go. Let's see what Coach O can do in the meantime. What happened with the St. John situation? Why is Chucky Mullen out all of a sudden?
He was a figurehead. Look, I will tell you a great story that is a one-on-one encounter that nobody else has. I was actually, for the Super Bowl, I was down in Atlantic City, and I'm playing at the tables, and a guy walks up. We were at Bally's, the Wild West Casino. A guy walks up with a Georgetown jacket on, you know. And I said to him, I said, oh, you know, Georgetown fan? He said, I work in the athletic department. And they had, you know, a lot of people down there. There was a lot of coaches and whatnot. And I said, okay. So I said to him, are you happy or sad about Patrick Ewing being there? Oh, we love Ewing. Blah, blah, blah. Oh, he's great. I said, come on. I said, he's a figurehead just like Mullen. The guy got angry at me. He said, well, I'm an assistant AD there, and we love Ewing. And Mullen's not a figurehead either. Come on. You know, Mullen was there to be a figurehead. Chris Mullen needed to get out because he had the team this year. He had the player this year. That team not only should have made the tournament and moved on, that team had Sweet 16 or Elite 8 talent on their team, and Mullen couldn't do anything about it. I watch a lot of St. John's games. When, you know, they take a timeout and they come to the huddle, Mullen's not drawing up plays, man. And I'm serious. He's not drawing up plays. Talking to them. Sometimes he doesn't talk to them. It was a weird situation with Chris Mullen. He's out. They wanted Bobby Hurley. Everybody kind of automatically looked to Bobby Hurley. Hurley is not coming in. Tim Kloos is the guy that, you know, that I've said that UNLV should have grabbed him 5 years ago. 10 years ago, I said UNLV. When I was on the air, I said he's that guy. Tim Kloos is the head coach of Iona. He has made it very publicly that this is probably, St. John's is probably his dream job. Iona put out a statement yesterday. St. John's never even contacted Tim Kloos about this job. He is the perfect fit. And I believe, and I said this on the air, not only do I, if Tim Kloos took the job at St. John's, not only do I believe St. John's is in the tournament, I believe that they are in a Final Four in the next 5 years. That's how highly I think of Tim Kloos. St. John's didn't even make a call to him.
But did they have the same coaching searching committee that UNLV had? Is that?
Oh yeah, absolutely, 100%. It's been, for as much as I have followed, you know, UNLV coaching searches, I don't think I've ever seen as ridiculous as right before the Menzies hire. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever seen that in sports. How badly boggled that was. A guy was hired for a day, then he quit, then another guy was coming in, and how many contracts. I think they hired about four coaches during that. But St. John's isn't that bad. But the last time before Chris Mullen was hired, they had an opportunity to grab about three or four other coaches, and St. John's declined to buy $2 million buyouts. They declined it. We don't think he's worth $2 million buyouts. So they went with Chris Mullen, who was probably just kind of standing in the weight room. You know, I mean, that's really the way it was. terrible, terrible situation. There were rumors, actually, that Jay Wright, who was coaching at Hofstra, which is on Long Island, was looked at for the St. John's job, and they just wouldn't meet his price. You know, you think about things like that, and you go, wow, it's not just UNLV, guys. There are some some premier basketball organizations out there that just don't know how to go through a coaching hire.
So maybe Bobby Hurley likes living in Arizona, right? Nice weather.
No, he doesn't. He wants to come back. Okay. He wants to come back east.
So what happened here? Why does he just not want to go into a mess that St. John's is? He's hoping that Duke opens up. Why not take that job if he can go back east?
Well, no, I'll tell you why. It's exactly what I just said. St. John's wouldn't pay the buyout. So the minute Arizona State came in and gave him a new contract, St. John's would have had to come in, buy him out, or give him a bigger contract, and they're just frugal. Don't ask me why, but they're frugal. They just did not want to pay Bobby Hurley. And, you know, one of the under-the-table people that doesn't want to be on record kind of said, well, we know that his big job is he's eyeing Duke. So what? Take Bobby Hurley for three, four years, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And move on. But St. John's doesn't want to be a stepping stone. Yeah, listen, that's who you are, okay? That's who you are. That's who UNLV is. They're a stepping stone. Deal with it. Deal with your position in life.
This is not the mid-'80s anymore.
No, not at all. Come on. You know, you had that kid that was on that team, on the previous year, Boulder, absolutely fantastic. And you had that talent, and you had to play a playing game? You know, come on.
Quick thoughts, the odds for next year's NCAA tournament came out, or the champion, Michigan State, the favorite.
Yeah, let me know when Izzo wins one in the final.
All right. I knew you were going to say that. I knew it. What about Tony Bennett coming back? How many players does he lose off this team, Tom? I mean, I saw guy on the fence. That's obviously a big one to come back, but he has a core coming back, though, that he's got a deep team again next year.
I am betting against Virginia only because of this. 3 years in ACC play last year. Or, I'm sorry, 3 losses total last year, 2 in the ACC. Or 2 years ago. Last year, 3 total losses in the ACC. They lost to Duke twice and then in the ACC championship, okay? You can't go through the ACC 3 years in a row and lose 2 games during the regular season. I just don't see that. So I don't see Virginia getting a 1 seed next year because of that. It's just the odds are just not with them. Will they get a 2 seed or a 3 seed? Sure. Can they have a shot? Yeah, but not at these odds. I'm not taking that shot.
Have you seen anybody just kind of eyeballing it that you like?
I think North Carolina has the shot. I have to see who's coming back. But here's what we know about North Carolina. Before the year began, this was not their year, right? They had a lot of good players, but it was Duke's year. Everybody knew it was Duke's year. Carolina was going to be good, but next year, that was it. You have to remember, you can't kind of just fail to focus. What was North Carolina supposed to be? They were supposed to be solid this year, but really good next year. Well, here it is, the really good part. They failed on a lot of levels this year. They got a number one seed, but they failed on a lot of levels. They weren't the best team in the ACC. They weren't the best 2 teams in the ACC. They were barely a top 10 team, but they got a number one seed and then did nothing with it. I think people forget how talented that this recruiting class was and how good they're going to be. And because they didn't do much, I wonder how many kids are going to come out. I have to see who they're going to lose, but I saw them at 14-1 odds, Tim. Carolina at 14-1 odds? That makes me absolutely think about going, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
That's Tom Barton, Tim Unglesby. We'll take our final time out here on a Saturday night. When we come back, Major League Baseball. We'll get into it 15 games into the season. See what Tom thinks about the first 2 weeks of the MLB season so far. Again, no show tomorrow night. Back at it next weekend, depending on how the playoffs shake out. We'll keep you informed with that. It's E-Wave Sports, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM.
Porcello out of the full windup. Davis is going to get one. Base hit into right field. And Sadie will score. Smith will score. RBIs 1 and 2. And for Chris Davis, it's over, baby.
Chris Davis, 3 for 5, 4 RBI today for the Oriole first baseman. Now batting, Tom, a robust 0.79 on the season.
There was no way he was going to sit down. We spoke about this briefly. There was no way he was going to sit down because of his contract. So get what you can out of him. Here's the thing. You don't want to admit this if you're an Oriole fan. But, Tim, I think you will. He was helping the team, wasn't he?
Absolutely.
You're going out there and you're trying to tank. Oh, who better than a tank than the over 54? He was helping the organization.
Tom, you know, we're 40 days away from the number one pick in the Major League Baseball draft. We're going to go back-to-back.
Exactly. Listen, yeah. Chris Davis is a team player that bleeds Baltimore blood. He knows he's going to be there for a while, so he's just trying to do his part.
I'll tell you what, and as we look at Major League Baseball, I've been picking and choosing my spots here with the Orioles, Tom. I had them today plus 230. I know you say I'm crazy for betting on a team that's as bad as they are. But Boston's no better than them right now. You know, in fact, Boston...
Baseball's the time to take those shots, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, baby. I was crazy. Not at all.
I looked at this game, and I was like, okay, Boston got him yesterday. Castro's been pitching okay. The Boston bullpen is atrocious. You know, you're talking about two teams that basically... Orioles are already over 100 runs against. Boston was at 91 coming in the game. You have 9 today, so... You pick and choose your spots. You're going to get the Orioles at generally well over $2 for much of this season.
How about the Mariners? They're the same situation. You know, if you could get my reasoning why Major League Baseball is the best sport to make money on. Let's say you hit 2 Oriole games at +2 to 1. Mm-hmm. You know, that's basically like going 4-0, as opposed to 2-0, or almost 5-0 with the Orioles prices rather than 2-0. So, no, you got to pick and choose your spots, and your boys right now are cashing tickets.
What's going on in that division when you look at, obviously we know why the Yankees are struggling. There's the whole team is injured. And you look at a team that both you and I chose to actually make the playoffs in Tampa. They're going to squeeze in. It looked good right now, Tom. And do we just want to give Snell the Cy Young again already? Can we just give it to him?
I predicted him to be the best pitcher in baseball about 5 years ago. I said, in about 5 years, he's going to be. He's ahead of even my schedule. I watched this kid pitch in Durham. I watched him come up through the ranks. He is everything. And I like the running mate that they have in Morton. Mm-hmm. I like Charlie Morton, too. They need that kind of that number three guy, and I think maybe they stole him from Pittsburgh, don't you? What about Austin Meadows? All I heard in Pittsburgh that Austin Meadows was better than Starling Marte, better than Gregory Polanco, and he was on the same par as Andrew McCutchen. And then they sold him for Chris Archer in a ridiculous trade. I blasted that trade massively when it happened. And now Austin Meadows. That's what this team needed. They had a lot of role players. Weddle was a role player, by the way, who's hurt, which is ridiculous that they're doing this with him being hurt. Kiermaier, who's always hurt, is a role player. They needed to go out there and get some guys, right? Get some guys that you could kind of rely on. Meadows is that guy. And you know one of the most underrated signings of the offseason? How about Tommy Pham?
Yes.
Tommy Pham is a hell of a player, man. This is why I picked them. I had them going to the playoffs. I had them finishing in front of Boston. And I got some hate mail at Tom Barton Sports over on Twitter. Oh, how can you come on, you're just a Boston hater. No, I saw what Tampa Bay was building. Yeah, I am a full believer in this team. By the way, we can talk about how good the Yankees bullpen is. They may have one of the best bullpens in baseball when you talk about how deep they go.
I don't know if you knew this or not, but Tommy Pham actually played high school baseball in Las Vegas.
Yes, I did. Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, there's something to, well, he struggled. He didn't come up until he was 29 years old. But he got LASIK surgery the year that he came up, and he's been raking ever since. Mm-hmm. I think there's something to that.
And I think in that Archer deal, was Glasnow also in that deal?
Yes, it was Glasnow, right. And Austin Meadows. It was, oh, horrible deal.
Smart front office there. They're giving up, what, about 2.7 runs a game right now. I know it's not going to stay that way, Tom, but just an unbelievable start for them. And, you know, they're gaining.
You want to play them in the playoffs? You want to take on Snell in game one, Morton in game two, and Glasnow in game three?
Not right now, you don't.
I don't think you do in October either. I'll tell you what, I'm a Yankee fan. I certainly don't.
Yankees, it's a timetable situation right now, right, Tom? You guys are going to come off, and as they come off, they're going to get adjusted. And, you know, 5 months from now, we'll be looking at Tampa, New York in a battle who's going to win the division.
Yeah, you just can't fall too far behind. I keep telling everybody every day not to panic. Don't panic. Don't panic. Don't panic. The problem is that this is the weak part of the Yankee schedule. You're playing Boston. You're playing the White Sox. You're playing Detroit. They're supposed to be cleaning up right now. And they're barely above water. You know, they're barely hanging on. I get it. The injuries are there. But the problem is, when you keep talking about coming back, I'm not sure, Tim. Look, Didi Gregorius is coming back from Tommy John surgery. They're saying June or July. I don't know if he's coming back from that major surgery and hitting the ground running. Luis Severino, I've written him off for the year. He may need Tommy John surgery. He may be gone for the year. Andujar is trying to work through this. That was considered a season-ending injury that he's trying to work through. I have no confidence he's coming back. And the problem with these other injuries, Giancarlo Stanton, well, you know, it was going to be a seven-day stint. Well, he's gone past the 7 days. Now he's hitting off a tee. Aaron Hicks will be ready for opening day. Don't worry about it. It's 2 weeks in, and now they're saying, well, he's starting baseball activity. You know, this is a situation where these guys are not coming back and you just slot them in. You go, oh, yeah, don't worry. They'll be back. They're going to be perfectly fine. I don't believe that. I don't believe that they will be perfectly fine. I'm getting nervous. I'm not panicking, Tim, but I'm getting nervous.
When does the fandom of Tom Barton become nervous and then just pissed off?
It depends on how far back and who we're chasing. You know, if the Red Sox were playing, for example, look at the Cubs situation right now. Not only are the Cubs a bad team at what they got, 3 wins or whatever, but Milwaukee's running away with this thing. And I know that Tampa Bay looks good, but Boston looks just as bad as the Yankees, if not worse. If the Red Sox were playing at a clip where they're running away, and the Yankees are looking at going into, you know, May down 8 games, 9 games, I'd be nervous. It'd be real. I'd start getting angry. You got to stay within 5 or 6 games. You stay within 5 or 6 games, you're okay. When you get to that double-digit range, I don't care if you're chasing Tampa, you're chasing Toronto, I don't care if you're chasing Baltimore. You get to double digits, and you get out of April, it starts to become a little bit rough. Because you think about the percentages, Tim. You know, the percentages are, you have to play 10 games better than someone else. That's a lot. That's a lot of games better. I'm glad it's not the Red Sox that you're chasing, because I could see Tampa fading late, although I don't think they necessarily will. The New York Yankees now, I know it's early in the season. I'm trying not to panic. I'm talking about the wild card, though.
Hottest team in the major leagues right now, the Houston Astros, struggled with Tampa and Texas to open the season. Tommy, they ripped off 8 in a row now. The bullpen looks solid. The starting pitching looks solid. And Altuve, he must have took some of the clear because he's been on fire too.
Yeah, he's really good. And tomorrow, what a matchup, right? I think the Mariners have lost one game in their last 10 or 11, and Houston's won 8 in a row. That's an interesting matchup. Look, I expect the Mariners to fall like a rock, Houston to kind of just ascend and take their place. But you're looking at Gerrit Cole tomorrow, who's now 0-2. Although he's pitched okay, he's still 0-2 against Marco Gonzalez, who looks very good. I think we got a game tomorrow. And you just look at how people just don't believe in the Mariners. That's a 170 line.
When you look at Houston, and I know we had talked about it in the preview show, Colin McHugh, question mark, right, coming into where he would fit in that rotation. He's pitched so far in the 3 starts. He's pitched well. Davinsky's pitched well. Wade Miley, Tom, complete bum for the last 3-4 years, is pitching well in that system. I know it's early. I know we could be completely talking about something else in 60 days, but I look at the fact they've only given up 50 runs in those 15 games with five losses to tell me that they did something right so far with the pitching.
Well, the guy that you didn't mention is the guy that everyone was that concerned about. That's Justin Verlander. If he's not that guy, Houston's entire team changes their perception of who they are and what they might be. Well, he went out there today, 11 strikeouts in 7 innings. So he's fine. But that's what it is. Look, you need Colin Verlander. The Houston Astros don't care what they do during the regular season. They just don't. Okay? It's something different for teams like the Astros. They are looking at the postseason, and it is a matter of let's just get the guys ready for the postseason. Let's get them geared up and start rolling. When you see Altuve the way that he's playing, you go, okay, that's an added dimension. They didn't have him last year fully for the entire year. Oh, well, what do they have this year? You got Altuve rocking. Correa looks like he's come back. Bregman is you know still Bregman. Springer's look good. Their hitting looks good. Their pitching looks good. I don't think that it's a stretch to say they are pretty much by far the best team in baseball right now.
Are the Yahoos there in New York talking about a Mets World Series championship this year after their hot start?
You mean they didn't win it yet? Because from where I sit here in New York, they've already won the championship.
Yes.
I mean, this is it. They're the greatest team ever. Pete Alonso is the MVP. Put him in the Hall of Fame because, you know, he's got 6 home runs in 13 games. And there's seemingly no mention of Robinson Cano looking absolutely pathetic out there. His bat looks slow. He looks bad in the field. He looks old. He looks bad. But no, we're not going to talk about that because the Mets have won the World Series. I mean, that's people are going absolutely bonkers about how good this Mets team looked. And the thing is that, Tim, we know that last year, they start 11-1?
Yep.
Right? We know how good they could be when they're healthy. Right now they're healthy. We've seen this story play out 5 or 6 times over the last 5 or 6 years. When they are healthy, they are really, really good. But you have a lot of guys on that team that just have health issues. I think tomorrow night is going to be a pretty good game against Julio Teheran, who has a 1.95 ERA in his last 14 starts against the Mets. He shuts them down. DeGrom's on the hill for the Mets. But DeGrom's start almost become a must-win, only for the mentality of, listen, if you want to compete, you got to win DeGrom starts, right? I mean, if you really want to be that first-place team, that team that wins the division, you can't lackadaisically lose DeGrom starts. Syndergaard looks okay. I wouldn't say he looks shut down. Jason Vargas is pathetic as a number 5. You know, there are some holes in that team, but yeah, basically they've won the World Series. Why even play the other 140 some odd games?
Yeah, Jason Vargas got one out today, Tom.
That's about right.
Yeah. In the Central,
but they don't need Dallas Keuchel.
Yeah, still out there, by the way. So when you look at the Central and you mentioned Milwaukee going away with it, St. Louis playing about 500 ball, I more so want to talk about the Reds, who we both kind of looked at as a team that we wanted to see take that next step. They're building, got off to a horrible start, Tom, 1-8, though. They've put it together now in the last 4. They've won 4 in a row, 5-8 now. You still see the positive signs there. It's a young team.
Yeah, listen, I thought that, like I said, they'd be a 500 team. Or slightly above. They're 3 games under. I'm okay with that. You have to remember right now, they don't have a lot of their pieces. Scooter Gennett is a pretty key piece to that team. He's not there. You look at Wood. You know, they went out there and they grabbed this kid from the Dodgers. I thought he was going to slot in. He hasn't pitched well. He hasn't pitched. So you look at what the Reds are. I think they'll be fine. Suarez hasn't really started to hit. I have full confidence that he will. I like the thing. Puig's hitting like, 140 or whatever. I like the things that the Reds are doing. I think they're going to be okay.
And did we both not say, Tom, again, don't like to pat ourselves on the back on this show, did we both not say Sonny Gray would probably do well in Cincinnati with no pressure there?
I thought he would do. I thought he would pitch admirably. You know, I think he's fine. What about Tanner Roark? Tanner Roark is a guy I was so upset to see leave Washington because I made money on him for the last 5 years being, quote-unquote, the fill-in starter, And the guy just came in and dominated every time that he was in there. And now he's in Cincinnati. He looked good today. I think he's definitely a guy that you look at and you go, underappreciated. See, that's a problem with Cincinnati. You know, Sonny Gray's a 3 or a 4, right? Luis Castillo, I thought, was going to ascend to maybe a 2, but he's basically a 3 or a 4. Tanner 3 or a 4. You get a bunch of 3 or 4s on your team, you can win some games, but you're not really a threat.
I wanted to save a good amount of time for this last division, though. Let's talk about the National League West. First, are you surprised by Colorado's awful start to this season?
Yes and no. I mean, I told you, I saw a fall off from them. They've been on the road a lot, and we know Colorado is a home place.
But they haven't won a game at home yet.
I was just going to say, but the problem is that they haven't won a game at home yet. And they're playing bad teams. They're playing San Francisco, you know. Look, Trevor Story is a big part of this team. He's gotten off to a pretty bad start. But it's the starting pitching. Marquez, it goes tomorrow. He had one good start, one bad start. Freeland, we knew he wasn't going to copy what he did last year, but he looks bad. Tyler Anderson is on the DL. They lost Ottavino. Their pitching, just put this on loop for the last 10 years, Colorado's pitching is just bad right now. And you just can't win games if your pitching's bad and just hope that your hitting just out-hits everybody every night. It's just not going to happen. Colorado is a team, though, that we've seen traditionally struggle with cold weather. I think they're going to be okay, Tim. I think that they are going to settle in. I didn't have them as a playoff team this year for a reason. I didn't see this coming. But I look at Colorado as a team that is just not right there. They're not what they were last year.
So the New York Met fans of the West would be the Dodger fans, and after the first week and a half of the season, you might as well crown them the champions. Tommy, they were sitting at 8-2, beating up on the Giants, beating up on the Diamondbacks, beating up on the Rockies. They take on the NL Central. They have not won a game against them, as St. Louis and Milwaukee now have been able to keep the Dodgers with a fat zero in the win column. Since then, 6 straight losses for the Dodgers.
It's amazing how the Dodgers have so much offense. Here's the thing, though. They're getting a guy back named Clayton Kershaw. You know, that'll be just a massive, massive boost. I think the Dodgers are fine. You know, again, they're in a division where they're going to be able to clean up. San Francisco's a bad team. I mean, a really bad team. The Arizona Diamondbacks are a pretty terrible team. I don't quite think San Diego's there yet. Colorado's not quite there. The Dodgers, even in a bad year, are still the better team.
Where do you see? You mentioned San Francisco, and I already seen the first rumor was Bumgarner to Philadelphia. This move happens sooner than later. He's free agent after the season, anyways. Correct?
Yes, he is. And you know, I keep hearing every single New York sports talk host saying Bumgarner to the Yankees, Bumgarner to the Yankees. Can I just come out and say it? Bumgarner has not been the same guy. Look, he had 7 innings, you know, 7 Ks today, 2 earned runs. It was a nice performance at home. And you get him for that playoff run. I understand that. But he's just not that same guy. So what are you going to give up for him? That's the question that you need to start asking yourself. What do you give up for a guy like Bumgarner? Philadelphia gave up a lot of talent already. Okay, they gave up Sixto Sanchez. They gave up a ton of talent to the Realmuto deal. Who does Philly have left? Well, they have a pretty good farm system, but who do you give up? Do you give up a Scott Kingery, who they've already given a contract extension to? Do you give up guys like that? If you're the Yankees, you know, do you give up your top guys on Bumgarner, who's basically a rental? If you go get him now, right? If you're the Yankees or Philly, and you go get him, you know, in the next month, makes a lot of sense, right? If you wait until June or July and you're dealing with, okay, we only want him for the playoff run, you're hoping and betting on a guy that hasn't been in the playoffs in a couple of years because he's been injured, hasn't been the most effective guy over the last couple of years because he's been hurt and banged up. I'm not sure if I'm giving up my top prospects for that.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I love Madison Bumgarner. You know that, Tommy. I'm a fan of his. I thought that when it came to the postseason, the guy was just nails. He's only 29 years old. The problem is, You mentioned all the Achilles heels of him. He gets banged up. He's got a lot of mileage on his body for a 29-year-old pitcher who throws, you know, you think about Madison Bumgarner, you don't realize it unless you've seen him. The guy's like 250 pounds, Tom. He's a big dude. A lot of mileage on the arm. For a 29-year-old in Major League Baseball, he's been around for a long time. I'd say he's got an arm probably of in the mid to upper 30s when you really want to look at it. So maybe he's not the guy anymore that he was or what you're hoping for. But you're not going to know unless you take the chance on it, because he's not going to win a lot of games in San Francisco. So, again, I agree with you. It's what are you going to give up for him, and who's going to overpay? Let's put it that way.
Yeah, and here's the thing. It depends on what kind of crisis situation you're in. If the Yankees get, you know, a letter tomorrow that says Luis Severino's out for the year, I think the Yankees have to make that move. They have to go get the best pitcher on the market, a guy that's a proven playoff performer, and that is Madison Bumgarner. But they don't have to make that move if there's hope that Severino could come back. They're going to need a force-by-hand kind of move. And it's the same thing with Philly. You know, Philly's got Nola and Arrieta pitching well. Pivetta hasn't looked very good, but you look at the depth of that rotation, you go, okay, they could get by with this. It's the move that's going to be, okay, we're a contender and we have to make a move. Severino is that news. If they get that Severino news back, I think all hell breaks loose.
And just to close it out, as far as Keuchel goes and Kimbrel, I heard Kimbrel wants $15 million a year still.
Yeah, Kimbrel turned down a $100 million or a $90 million contract. He said he wants $100 million just last week.
I guess
so. Craig Kimbrel doesn't have a job because Craig Kimbrel doesn't want a job.
I was going to say, he priced himself out of the market on his own doing, because he doesn't want to pitch.
Now, I got him in one of my fantasy leagues, and I'm going, come on, can you sign? Can you sign yet?
Okay, so where does he go?
I think I can repeat what I just said about Bumgarner, right? I think he goes to a team that is desperate for that. Okay, a closer is going to get us a title kind of situation. Milwaukee is definitely in that mix, because while Hader is doing well, they live and die by that closer. I think Milwaukee is certainly in the mix. St. Louis might be, if they don't believe that Hicks can close. If Atlanta can get close, we know that bullpen is a mess, right? We know for a fact that they can't live and die on that. And then you still have the Boston Red Sox out there, whose bullpen is, we knew it was going to be weak, and it's pretty weak. Boston feels like they're a closer away from a World Series. They'll swallow their pride and go sign them.
Tom, a quick 2 hours in the books. Let everybody know about the website and Sports Garden Network Monday through Friday.
Yeah, guys, go check out Sports Garden, GARTEN. Like I said, I just had Brian Widorf on Monday. I have the author of the Grant book. So we got a lot of good guests. I also have David Dancy from the AC Press this week. So go check it out. It's sportsgarden.com. That's with a T. And go check out TomBartonSports.com, hitting 68% over the last 60 days. I am red hot, even with my Tampa Bay losses. I'm red hot, on fire, had the magic today, among other teams. So go check it all out at TomBartonSports.com. Tim, next week, we might be off on Sunday if there's a game six.
Yes, you are correct. But for sure, we'll be on next Saturday. So, Tom, have a great week, and we'll talk to you in 1 week's time.
All right. Have a good one, guys.
TomBartonSports.com, Sports Garten with a T Network. You can check out Tom all week long over there. And Tommy's right. We'll be back Saturday night at 10 o'clock right here on Fox Sports Radio. For Nick Nice, always a pleasure to see him again.
Yeah, boy!
We will talk to you then. It's Heatwave Sports, only on Fox Sports Radio. Good night.
Look up Heatwave Sports on Facebook and on Twitter at HW Sports and at Tom Barton Sports.